session number 11223, Reel 1.
Mr. Howard, Reel 1. How did you come to be involved with the Pegasus Bridge episode, please?
I went into the glider infantry in 1942 when they were asking for volunteers. At the time, I was in a young soldiers' battalion, youngsters under the age of 19 who weren't allowed to go abroad, and it seemed that this was the right reserve of troops to call on, being young and stupid. And May 1942, I went into the Oxen Bucks and joined up with 25 Platoon, in which a lot of my mates, whom I later associated with very much, like Wally Parr, Jack Bailey, and several others, all green troops, were formed into a platoon called Number 25 Platoon. And they decided to make me the 2-inch mortarman. And I spent some time with 25 Platoon as a 2-inch mortarman. And during that stage, I got my nickname, Smokey. Being that the order used to be fire 2HE or fire 6 smoke bombs, hence the name Smokey. And even now, 50 years afterwards virtually, 45 years afterwards, my mates still call me Smokey. Eventually, due to some misguided advice given to the company commander, I was made a Lance Corporal, and that meant I had to move platoons, and so I then joined Todd Sweeney's platoon.
Which one was that?
As a Lance Corporal, it was 23 Platoon. And went into that platoon as second in command of a section, and eventually they decided to make me a full corporal and put me in charge of a section, which included all the layabouts under the sun. There was Alf Porter was my Lance Corporal. He was an ex-commando, and he was an old man. He was 30 at the time. And there was Glyn Roberts. He was a good friend of mine. He was the brain gunner. And we had Killer Roach. He was a gypsy, and we called him Killer because when he went into the boxing ring, he flailed his arms around all over the place, and he either knocked out the other bloke or the other bloke knocked him out very quickly. And then there was Buck Reed. He came from the Norfolk Regiment, and a little chap he was who broke all the rules under the sun. And there was Sammy Ferguson, who came from Northern Ireland. He was a regular soldier. And he was an ex-boxer, and he looked like an ex-boxer because he was slightly punch-drunk. And anyway, that was the section I went over on D-Day to Pegasus Bridge, or the Pegasus Bridge complex at the time, because my platoon landed on the bridge over the River Orne, which was a sister bridge to Pegasus Bridge. that is the lead-up, really, to the way I got involved.
So did you just join for adventure and excitement?
Yeah, I suppose, really. I used to work for an insurance company when I was a boy of 16 in 1939, and the insurance company decided to evacuate from London, and after a week of war, that was probably the beginning of September 1939, they decided that all youngsters of the age of 16 or 17 would in fact be given a month's notice. And so suddenly 20 or 30 of us found ourselves on the street with no work at all. And eventually, I did get a job, I think, in November 1939, which saw me through until such time as I decided that I was fed up with that sort of life, and it'd be rather nice to get into the adventurous life of the army. I did try for the Air Force as a pilot. I went down to Weston-super-Mare and had my tests. I was all right on the educational, but apparently my eyes were such that they couldn't focus quickly enough on oncoming planes. They gave me this test at Weston-super-Mare, and so they offered me a job on the ground staff, but that at the time didn't sound too adventurous. And so a friend of mine happened to be going into the army. He'd recruited himself at the Bexley Heath Recruitment Centre, and I met him in the swimming baths, I think, in about May 1941, and he said, well, why don't you come along with me and join the King's Royal Rifle Corps? I said, what a good idea. And so I wandered along to the King's Royal Rifle Corps at Bexley Heath, signed on, and then a week later I was sent to Chatham to have my medical and to take the King's Shilling. And be told to report to Winchester Barracks on a certain day. Exactly what that day was, I can't quite remember. Yes, I can. It was the 3rd of July, 1941. So that's the way I, you know, I came into the army. mind you, another 6 months and I would have been called up at the age of 19.
What was the training that you had to do for the Pegasus Bridge event like then?
Pegasus Bridge, I suppose, really. I don't suppose we were specifically trained in the first years in the Auckland Bucks for a Pegasus Bridge job. We were trained in all sorts of infantry work. And I presume that Major John Howard had been told much earlier on that the strategics, which lightly armoured airborne troops would in fact be expected to encounter, would be things like bridges, gun emplacements and things of that nature. And I suppose old John Howard started to train us up for these things a bit earlier than when, in fact, he got his orders to attack Pegasus Bridge. After, in fact, we were adept at using arms, had been well and truly trained to use weapons of war. We spent a lot of time on rifle ranges and that sort of thing. Then Major Howard seemed to concentrate on the physical fitness side of it, and I suppose something like 25 to 30% of our time was spent in running, football, you name it. We used to do it, salt courses and the rest of it. And
how did people respond to the pressure under which they were put in the training?
Well, the youngsters were all 18, 19 and 20. There were very few old men. When I say old men, men are 25 or 26. They're all short hair-cutted young lads who liked to pint. And they seemed to have no stress at all. The only stress they had, of course, was keeping up on a 10-mile cross-country run. That was the only stress there was about it. and as far as the exercises were concerned, we did. Frankly, I think most of the lads enjoyed them because they were fit and being stuck out in the countryside in fairly low temperatures all night long just didn't seem to bother them. They seemed to be fit enough to cover those things at the time.
Were you looking forward to the operation or apprehensive about it?
Let me think. We first heard about the operation, I believe, in April 1944. We were told that there were two bridges, and that's all we were told. And John Howard told us that we, in fact, had been chosen to spearhead the advance into Europe on these two bridges. He seemed delighted. I think the only thing we were thinking about at the time was, well, good, we're going to get some leave out of this. I think that was our attitude at the time. And I don't think apprehension crept in until almost before we were taking off. Apprehension probably crept in when we were at our transit camp, which was heavily guarded, so we couldn't get out. And we started playing cards in the tents for all the spare money which was knocking about in people's pockets. And I think that's when we started to be a bit apprehensive about it, 2 or 3 days before the operation actually took part, took place. I remember that 2 days before we took off, quite appropriate really, we went to had a film in the camp called Stormy Weather with Lena Horne playing a starring part in this film, which we thought was very appropriate at the time. Apprehension, I suppose, was when we actually started to put our foot into the gliders, which were to take us over to France. That's when you started thinking about things. And you started imagining, you know, well, machine guns could knock us down quite easily, and you know, had in fact the Germans any idea that we were coming. These were the things we thought about as we were going across in the gliders, but before then, no apprehension at all, I don't think.
You said that you were a section leader in 23 Platoon, which was to land at the Orne Bridge.
Mm.
Can you tell me in detail the plan of what was supposed to happen as far as your unit was concerned?
Yeah, we were supposed to... let me put it this way. There were 6 gliders went across. The first objective was Pegasus Bridge. And if, in fact, the first glider had been knocked out, it would have been the objective of the second glider to go straight into Pegasus Bridge. If that one was knocked out, the third glider would go in. If that one was knocked out, in fact, if the first 3 gliders on Pegasus Bridge didn't get there, it was the duty of the gliders coming into the Orne Bridge to, in fact, concentrate on Pegasus Bridge and not the Orne Bridge. And each glider was, in fact, told the duties of the other gliders, and each glider or each platoon was in fact practiced in the duties of or the objectives of all the other gliders, so that our primary objective, 23 Platoon, was to in fact support the glider which was in front of us. That was Freddie Fox's glider, was in fact to rush over the Orne Bridge and take up position on the other side. We were to land and then rush over the bridge through Freddie Fox's platoon. My particular objective with my section, there was a little farmhouse on the other side of the bridge, and it was up to me to get into that farmhouse, make sure there were no Germans there. And I was taught my little bit of French before we went across there. And I had to bang on the door, go inside and say, "Où est le Boche?" This is the French we were taught. And the other objective was that the platoon would in fact fan out along the far side of the riverbank to the left-hand side, and take up a machine gun position, a Bren gun position, just a little further along from the bridge on the road. and to hold up anything that may come along there at that particular time. That was the objective. Very simple objectives, really.
So your glider was to land on what, the west or the east side of the...
We were to land on the west side of the River Orne. Let me see, let me get this right. It comes down there. That's the east side. The west side of the River Orne. So that we would then dash along the side of the river to dash across the bridge onto the east side. Yes, that was it. We had a scale model we could work to, which we were well and truly versed in, which practically showed every tree there was along that riverbank. It was an excellent model, actually, so we had a very fair idea where we were as soon as we landed. But my glider, we landed about 300 yards short of the objective. And I remember it well that Todd Sweeney, glider landed perfectly, no problem with the landing. I remember Todd Sweeney was out, and we did the usual thing we did when we jumped out of a glider, all-round defence, in other words, a circle all round the glider. And Todd Sweeney was sat in the centre, and the first thing he did was to call an O group, which was an order group. That meant that he called together the corporals and the sergeant and issued his orders. The first thing he had to do was find out where he was, and he and the glider pilot, in fact, pinpointed their spot very well, actually, all from the models which we'd been brought up to see, you know, previously. And off we trotted down to a hedgerow, which had quite a big ditch in it.
But before you take it any further, was there any damage or injury done when the glider landed?
None at all. No injury whatsoever to anybody or anything. In fact, from what I can remember, the glider probably finished up as it would do in an exercise on its, on its landing skids or landing wheels, and so it came down in an aerodrome in this country. Very skillful piloting work. There's no doubt about that. And I think the other glider which landed too, Freddie Fox's glider which landed, that landed in a fair shape. But the third glider, which was supposed to have landed on our bridge, in fact landed on the River Dease about 15, 20 miles away. It thought it had landed on the bridge, but in fact it was the wrong one. And, in fact, those boys had quite a hairy time. That was 22 platoon, and the second-in-command of the company was on that glider. Oh, dear, Captain... I forget his name. You've probably come across it.
We'll come back to you later.
We'll come back later, yes. And they had quite a hairy time. In fact, the platoon commander was captured by the... by a German patrol, and from what I can gather, the second in command with two or three troops were lying in the hedgerow when in fact the German patrol with the platoon commander came walking down the road, and the second in command shouted out in English, "Get down," and he immediately fell flat on his face, and the troops opened fire and I think probably killed everybody in this German patrol. And then they had the tedious job of getting their way back to the bridges at Benneville, which was quite hairy, I suppose. Because at that time there were English paratroops or British paratroops landing in that piece of countryside between the River Dease and the Benneville bridges. And there must have been quite a few German patrols knocking about at the time. So instead of three gliders landing at Elbridge, two gliders landed there. But the opposition was very light. Nothing. We had no contact with the enemy at all until maybe an hour after we landed. Jimmy Merton's section in my platoon opened fire on a German patrol and killed them all, but unfortunately they also killed a British paratroop who was being held prisoner by this patrol. But this was at 1 o'clock in the morning, and shadows are flickering all over the place, blackness was around, and anything which in fact didn't and I think at that time we discarded our I'm pretty certain we discarded our helmets and put on our red berets for recognition purposes. I'm certain of that. I think the instructions were that as soon as you get out of the glider and you're safe, discard your helmets and put on your red berets. I think that was it. So anybody in a helmet was a sitting duck as far as we were concerned. And I think the paras were the same. They were told to take off their helmets and put on their red berets. I'm certain that was right. So anybody with a helmet on would, in fact, have been fair game, as far as we were concerned.
So, if you can go back to where I interrupted you with you, I think you said you went to a hedgerow.
Yes, on the way to the bridge. Went to a hedgerow, which I suppose was, 50 yards from the river bank itself, and we went down this hedgerow, and the platoon commander immediately fell in water up to his waist, I think, and we probably travelled down this hedgerow 200-250 yards before in fact we came out on the road, which in fact actually led to the bridge. And I think our call sign was Easy. In other words, we dashed onto the bridge, not shouting too loudly, but making plain to the people on the bridge or near the bridge that we were in fact British. And as we ran along to the bridge, we all shouted out, "Easy, easy, easy." That was our call sign. And the other sign of the platoon on the bridge, I think, was Fox. They shouted out Fox. That was their call sign, so that we recognised one another. Remember, it was pitch black. We really couldn't see too far. And so we had these call signs. Yes, and so we dashed through the ranks of Freddie Fox's platoon, who were either lying on the bridge or were on the other side of the bridge in their gun positions, and we in fact then attacked our objectives. And I came upon this little farmhouse. It seemed to be more of a farmer's cottage than a farmhouse, and banged on the door, big wooden door, and eventually opened. And then we used our ersatz French to the little old lady and the little old man who came to the door, "Ouai le Bosch." And they just didn't want to know. They were not interested. They didn't know whether we were Germans or whether, in fact, we were Polish, or we could have been Czechs, we could have been Hungarians, we could have been anything. And we just motioned to them to go indoors, and there was very little we could do there. It was a very small place, and one of my men went in and just rooted around to make certain there were no Germans in there. And then we repaired to our positions, and the position I happened to have was by the road in this little, in the grounds of this little farm cottage. And we set up the brain gun by the side of the road. We didn't trouble to dig in. There didn't seem to be much point in digging in at that stage because my blokes were expert at finding well-concealed positions, and if there did happen to be any fold in the ground where they could hide themselves, they would do that. And I took up a position which was in a little dip by the side of this farm cottage. And I had with me Buck Reed, one of my men. He came from the Norfolk Regiment. And we decided we were going to have a smoke. This was probably about 25, 30 minutes after midnight on D-Day. And we were pretty expert at this. We had flying smocks on. And the idea was to unzip your flying smock, put your hand inside your flying smock, zip it up with a cigarette, then bury your face right down into the flying smock, light a match, and you couldn't be seen from outside. And then the cigarette itself was tucked up under the sleeve of the flying smock so that all that you had pointing to the front was, in fact, the tip of the cigarette. This was totally against orders, of course. There was no smoking allowed, naturally. Just because, you know, somebody might have seen us. But I suppose, at that time, of the 150 or so men in the company, it's my guess 120 of them were smoking. There's no doubt about that. Other than those who happened to be fighting at that particular time. I suppose we sat there for a little while. The platoon commander came along and told us to take positions on the river bank itself, leading down to the river, which we did. And then we heard the motorbike. And noise of maybe an armoured vehicle, maybe a car coming from the distance. And as this thing came rushing along to our bridge, there were probably a dozen troops lined up with brain guns, rifles, revolvers, Sten guns, waiting for this this noise to appear on our bridge. And when it did eventually turn up, it happened to be a motorcycle and a staff car, which were both totally riddled with bullets. This was probably at about 1, 1:30 in the morning. And that is what I remember of it. What happened to the two participants, the chap riding a motorbike, and there was a staff officer, I think, in the car. Maybe with the driver, maybe not. But what exactly happened to them, I only found out years afterwards when I read the book Pegasus Bridge, because at the time I don't think we were particularly in.